Welcome back, everybody. This is Gabrielle Real, broadcasting live on Radio Real. It's 11 a.m., Second Lifetime, and we're starting back up with the ALA Symposium here in Cyberary City. And we have our next presenter on the line, as well as Tom Peters. So I'm going to pass the microphone to Tom to introduce our next speaker.
Thanks, Gabrielle. Welcome back, everyone. We're getting ready for the next section of presentations and discussions. Overall, we're looking at libraries and library-related organizations and what they're doing in Second Life today. Our next speaker is going to talk about special libraries in Second Life, and she is Carol Perryman in real life, and she is a medical and consumer health librarian with 20 years of experience in public, law, and medical libraries. And she's also a PhD student at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill in their Library and Information Science Department. Although her dissertation research focuses on evidence-based library and information practice, she is equally interested in what peer communities can achieve in terms of supporting health behavior change and even in sharing a process of clinical evaluation of health information. So join me in welcoming Carol Perryman.
Thank you so much, Tom. And thank you, ALA. Thank you, Gabrielle, and everybody else involved in organizing the event. Thank you, and hello, everybody. As a doctoral student, I have been taught to ask, when I propose a topic for research or evaluate the work of others, this question: why does it matter? The implications of the question include that it needs to be focused on meaningful questions. Our research needs to be focused on meaningful questions. And to be honest with you, and I think that Tom mentioned this too, I've seen a lot of skepticism about virtual world librarianship. Comments, for example, about being too busy with a First Life. How many times have you guys heard that? About how our being here is a waste of time and resources when both are in such short supply. Isn't it just playing with Barbie doll avatars? I've even heard that mentioned too. I, in fact, was not so different 2 years ago. But with that in mind, I wanted to apply that particular question today to the activity of consumer health librarianship in Second Life. Why does this matter? So in order to explore the question, I'd like to explain in a very brief and incomplete way what I've been doing. And at the end, there is no one definitive answer, and everybody listening is asked to consider what your own answer might be. So first, I'm going to talk about how I got here, and then I'll tell you about what's kept me busy for a couple of years. After that, I thought I'd throw in a little bit of speculation and just a tiny bit of soapbox standing. I mean, why not? So how I got here. I think that there's always a beginning to a story. You know, but of course, it always goes back much farther than we have time to tell. So we end up picking up one arbitrary starting place. And mine begins by saying this: I am not, nor have I ever been, a gamer. I'd never thought of doing anything with Second Life. In fact, I was totally immersed, drowning, okay, in my studies at UNC Chapel Hill. And this good friend of mine, a former colleague from a hospital library in Illinois, Lori Bell, kept telling me about this strange thing, Second Life. You know, we'd kept in touch and shared our involvement with various things over the years, always sort of marveling at how, even though our paths had diverged, we continued to share deep interests in distance education and professional development issues. And she kept telling me with all this great enthusiasm, you have to come and see this. You have to come check it out. So me, I'm like, you know, I don't have time for this, I kept saying repeatedly. But of course, Lori is persistent. And eventually, she wrote the grant that would fund Health Info Island. Honestly, I thought I'd be staffing the virtual equivalent of a reference desk, you know, sort of like an extended IM reference service. So instead, I find myself building, planting trees and flowers, flying and learning. So insert here in your imagination mental images, me falling in oceans, losing my clothes at inappropriate times, crashing out of programs repeatedly, and privately practicing my less acceptable language skills, yet more learning curves as well. But during that whole process, I found myself reflecting on our profession, inevitably contrasting perceptions I'd gained from several decades of real-world library experience, and all I thought I knew, with what I was learning in this curious, created world, Second Life. 2 years in, we've received 4 grants, all from the National Library of Medicine, all administered by the Alliance Library System in East Peoria, Illinois. The first, entitled Providing Consumer Health Outreach and Library Programs to Virtual World Residents, ran from 2006-2008. This built Health Info Island, and I consider that my home base in Second Life. Our objectives were, and still are, exploring the provision of consumer health information services in a virtual environment. Because we had no model, part of the answer has had to be, and here I quote the title of an article written about the Second Life librarian experience, Stumbling, Bumbling, and Flying. Not so different, ultimately, from our pioneering use of computers, minus the flying and clothing loss, although that's been my experience, but similar in terms of creative use of language, I promise you. Health Info Island was imagined as a warmly inviting and beautiful space, far different from any institutional environment. I'd seen too many people afraid, disempowered by the alien landscape of healthcare. So having this welcoming environment seemed even more important to me than it might for other purposes. There are mountain gardens with quiet spaces for small group meetings, interactive displays, like a giant coronary artery left on the lawn like a toy, but meant to demonstrate heart disease. The Consumer Health Library looks more like a home than a library, with a fireplace and warm colors. Just like other spaces on Health Info Island, it's intended more as a meeting space than as a container of information. The information lives within our transactions and is usually created on demand. I am saying here that collections are somewhat ephemeral in Second Life, symbolic of what, as information professionals, we create in response to need. As with this other informational displays on Health Info Island, the library's contents are the result of collaborative development with links to health support groups, to resources on the web, together with contact information for specific health information needs. So I've given space here to a display created by a medical student in Brazil, for example. He is agoraphobic and had decided to become active in the virtual world as a way to help himself. Since then, he began a support group for those with agoraphobia or panic disorder, and together we worked to create a room full of information about agoraphobia, depression, panic disorder, and social anxiety. From the start, I began to gather information about the numerous health support groups in Second Life, and this effort continues. We've counted around 200. One result of this has been the Health Support Coalition, created to support new groups and encourage our collaboration. It is these groups that are our primary conduit for outreach. I can send one message about a class to more than 40 health support group leaders, and because of networking, I can reach more than 1,500 people. For Health Info Island, I've learned to deliberately encourage cross-promotion and collaboration as an important way to increase our visibility. I'm always delighted to display the work of other groups, promote other organizations, and ask for their participation in events in return for their referrals and their collaboration on new ventures. A good example of that, I think, is the breast cancer display. The first part of it was created by a breast cancer survivor working with Why Me, a real-life web resource for breast cancer awareness. Then a real-life epidemiologist created an adjunct poster on breast self-examination. So then the other day, I was looking at MedLibel, the medical library listserv, and I noted an updated listing of online resources for breast cancer. Contacting the author, I asked her to share them in Second Life. Now her name and her work is attached to a Netlinks URL giver in a world she's never entered. People can touch the display for a menu of options and make a choice, which will open an in-world browser window. That was Kroll's work, by the way. Challenges for this initial project and for all those following it include these: how to market, how to find out what is wanted and needed in an environment where people are not expecting to find services like ours. How to help people who live in other countries where health services and even guidelines for diagnosis and treatment can be very different. How to help those who speak different languages. How to deal with quacks and other misinformation, both of which do definitely exist in Second Life. And how to evolve best practices in teaching and content creation, working with healthcare professionals in this environment. A second grant was for the Accessibility Center, with an objective of increasing awareness of disabilities and assistive resources. For this project, a building was created also on Health Info Island and furnished with informational displays and interactive games. We also hosted events that we publicized throughout the community. One was a panel presentation on the principles of universal design, which explored the needs of those with disabilities in virtual worlds. Second Life attracts a large number of people who are homebound and physically impaired. So while someone in a wheelchair, for example, can easily walk in a virtual world, their full use may be impaired by environmental design factors. The panel was led by two people in real life disabled themselves, one an engineer who works with accessibility design. Another event was a talk on grassroots activism for those with disabilities by Nick Dupree. Nick is a quadriplegic as a result of muscular dystrophy, and he's also ventilator dependent. He used his left thumb to manipulate a keyboard in order to speak about his successful fight against Medicaid in order to get reimbursed for home care past the age of 21. His talk was attended by a very large number of other disabled individuals who were quite vocal, taking the opportunity to speak out, including their anger, and to be listened to by the health educators and journalists also in attendance. Virtual Ability Island is the result of our third still ongoing grant, which rose directly from our involvement with the Accessibility Center. The entire island right next door to Health Info was created according to those same universal design principles. Signage, walkways, and the pacing and content of the orientation modules were all done with the awareness of understanding of universal design. This includes such things as larger fonts for signage, pathways that are easy to navigate for those whose fine and even gross motor skills are impaired, and careful attention to colors and even things like the angles of signs. It is, bar none, the best orientation center in Second Life. We are partnered here with the group Virtual Ability Incorporated, comprised of a number of disabled individuals who are absolutely dedicated to mentoring peers to find community in this world. This is what can happen here. Currently, we have a fourth grant just begun. Now listen to this. I love this. Karuna will be island home to the project called AIDS Information and Outreach in the Virtual World of Second Life. In Pali, an early Indo-Aryan language, Karuna embodies the desire to remove harm and suffering, and it's paired with metta, the desire to bring about the well-being and happiness of others. As with the first three grants, the project will build on the ideal of collaboration, community. We'll be sharing space with our colleagues, AIDS.gov, a social worker for AIDS HIV in the Bronx, two AIDS HIV support groups from InWorld, and people who work with CIFAR, or the Center for AIDS Research Regional Center at UNC. We'll have a resource and community center and offer classes and workshops as we have with all the other projects we've done, this time incorporating podcasts and other content from AIDS.gov and CIFAR, etc. Excitingly, though, the heart of Karuna is stories, human stories. Janaya Moraine, a writer and educator, will be leading the story project, helping us build what we think of as a garden of experience where people can share stories, poetry, song, and art about the AIDS HIV experience. I haven't really addressed one important issue to shift over a little bit, which is health reference services. I'm often asked if I get real reference questions. My answer is, oh yes, I sure do. I seldom get any, in fact, about Second Life, unless it's something like how to find an in-world support group. So I compiled just a very short list just to give you an idea. What kind of new research is going on, somebody asked, for migraine therapy? Another, I've just learned that I and my child both have a rare genetic disorder. What is it? What can I expect in the future? How does the eye and brain work to reverse what it sees in the process of vision? How can I calm my choking, ventilator-dependent child? Are there support forums for parents of such children? And what is the differential diagnosis for schizophrenia? Might I have other disorders instead? To answer these and other questions, about 60 a month. I use freely available resources like Medline Plus, PubMed, and Google. I respond in Second Life by sending people note cards, but I also use email to provide longer documents, very often the case. So when I can't find information with those resources, which are, you know, my questions are often quite complex and difficult, I've used proprietary resources to provide subject headings and sometimes citations. I refer people back to their home libraries for further assistance. I never diagnose, and I never second-guess an existing diagnosis or treatment. Instead, I position myself as a person who can help empower others in their healthcare relationships. So questions I get through that process lead me to plan for classes or workshops like those on children's health, heart health, and searching PubMed. But building on that, I've begun to recruit and collaborate with other health librarians so that together we can provide a dynamic range of classes and resources, combining our skills and interests to explore consumer health librarianship here. I've really enjoyed creating and conducting classes, too, on consumer health reference skills as well, talking about issues of trust, confidentiality, and global health information with librarians from all over. At the outset, I asked a question. Why does this matter? My own answer, I find, is threaded throughout the activities I've described and more. I said, too, that this question is one that should be asked individually and maybe constantly. I continue to ask it, and I can share with you some of the answers I've arrived at after 2 years. I feel I am not here only to be a consumer and medical librarian in Second Life, which is considerable in itself, but to explore new ways of being, and I've heard echoes of that through the other speakers' comments today. To collaborate with librarians and others in new ways, and to ask questions that need asked about libraries as places, about the nature of information and our work with it, about health information literacy, about whether the structures we've created in the real world are working to accomplish ever-changing objectives and those emerging in our increasingly networked environment. About how we as librarians can gain new knowledge about our profession by daring to bridge the boundaries between us, and about new relationships with those we serve. While some may feel it necessary to stand at the portal to this world and joke about needing to get a first life, many in Second Life have been busy for several years reaching beyond boundaries to form new alliances. At Health Info Island and in our projects, Share the Health, the Accessibility Center, Virtual Ability Island, and now with Karuna, we've worked with health professionals, support groups, educators, and federal agencies in ways never imagined. For more than 20 years in public, academic, law, and medical libraries, I've watched leaders who are unafraid to dream. Lori Bell is among them. And I'm so glad I conquered my own skepticism because, you know, it's changing my career and how I view our profession. I've come to believe Second Life offers us these things, community, across the entire breadth of our profession and far beyond it. A mandate for creativity unlimited by walls and a space to meet one another where questions that need asking can be asked. I decided I would end by misquoting Rumi, appropriating some of his words and changing them to this, out beyond ideas of must do and have always done, there is a field. I'll meet you there. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Carol. Very articulate presentation, and I was just typing in a text. I couldn't type and talk at the same time, but it seems like you and when you mentioned that, and several people today have mentioned that their experiences in Second Life are changing how they view their profession. I find that very fascinating and encouraging. Can you talk a little bit more about how it's changing your view of your profession?
Well, you know, my research focuses on evidence-based practice in librarianship, so I'm looking at librarian information behavior as the focus of my dissertation. So I am looking at what we do in our professions, and I can't help but notice that we are somewhat isolated islands. We haven't really evolved any kind of best practices except for in the most ephemeral ways or the most shallow ways. I'm talking about something like LibQual. We define the success of our work by our consumers, you know, those we serve. I sort of have some problems with that. I have problems with the whole divide between research and practice. Also, there's so many questions. You know, I've noticed, though, in Second Life, I get together with people in other professions. I get together with people in other libraries. We find commonalities that we've had barriers between us for so long. We don't even know how we've evolved. I think this is really a valuable experience.
Mm-hmm. And Jackie just typed in touch chat. I am not a librarian, and my views about librarianship have dramatically changed in Second Life. I agree with Carol that more of us non-librarians need to know more about what ALA is doing. So, great, Jackie. Carol, I've been meaning to ask you this. I've known Carol and worked with Carol in Second Life and in real life for years now. And I mean to ask you, do you think that, let me back up and say that this seems to me that the support groups in Second Life for people with medical conditions, health conditions, is a real powerful use of Second Life. And I'm wondering if, do you imagine that could in-world support groups actually almost like surpass real-world support groups?
I think that it can be one source of support because there's a great deal of activity going on online. You know, as you know, Tom, some of my past research has been with web-based support forums. I can't really speak to the virtual world use of support groups. I can certainly speak to the internet-based, the web-based forums. I do find that that's a tremendous benefit to people who may be isolated or homebound. And in fact, as with people who have AIDS or other rare diseases, that they can reach out and find some commonality, some real community, and then share too with each other a discussion about the validity of information and help make decisions with each other. I think it's a function beyond value. And you know, when you're sick with something, when you're sick or disabled, your need for community goes beyond simple health information. That's just the start. Your entire world is structured around sometimes those disabilities. So you live around that. This is a very, very important function. I think that it is our task as health librarians and as health professionals to ask now, let's turn it around and find out what the needs are of such communities and then structure services to meet those communities rather than the other way around.
Okay, then. Orinoke Westland asked the question, Carol, do you feel that your growth in Second Life has impacted how you work in real life or how you advise others to work in real life? So sort of what have you brought back from Second Life into your real life?
Well, I never would have imagined for 20 years in different kinds of libraries that I would be in direct contact with what I think privately of as the big dogs. You know, you know, you get into Second Life and suddenly I'm dealing with people who are at the CDC, NLM, ALA, you know, just, I mean, the whole list of acronyms goes on and on. I mean, here we're sort of empowered to outreach to people who have effect way, way beyond my normal range of activities. Wow, it's kind of intimidating, I have to say. I mean, you know, you sort of think here, how do I deal with this? Is there something un-PC? Do I really have to watch my P's and Q's? You know, what kind of bureaucracy got carried into Second Life? You know, so I, it has affected me. I think that I am less afraid. I mean, I recognize these folks, the big dogs, as real people too. And as people who get just as excited about initiatives and ideas as I do. That does change things. Yeah. It must.
Yeah. Then there's a follow-up question from Adra. Is social presence enhanced via Second Life support groups? Do you think that Second Life support groups really establish a strong social presence?
I'm not sure I understand that question. The social presence for an individual. I'm just laughing at Stolvano's comment about the clothes.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand the question either.
Could that be rephrased? Maybe I'm just sort of brain dead at this point, but could it be? Is social presence? Do you mean for the individual?
She said an equalizing experience. So
for the individual.
I think for the individual, and maybe I can piggyback on that and say, you know, we joke about, and someone joked earlier about, well, I look like Barbie in real life. And,
yeah,
you know,
I saw that.
Relationship between your avatar and yourself, but I think for someone, let's just pick a wheelchair user. Mm-hmm. That becomes less of a trivial and a mirthful decision, doesn't it? Like, should I use a wheelchair in Second Life or not? For example, if I'm a wheelchair user in real life.
Yeah, so you craft your social presence. In other words, I think it does make us think about that.
You know, I want to quote unquote pretend that my whatever have a mobility challenge or whatever doesn't exist in Second Life because it doesn't have to exist in Second Life? Do I disclose that to people? There's some really interesting questions, I think, here about.
There's a very large number of them, yeah. I think that.
How you project yourself into a virtual world like this.
I think that the answer to that may be way more complex than I have the capability of answering right now. I mean, within group, I think that. That community empowers individuals in perhaps unexpected ways. One example of that, for example, is that there's a whole sort of model used. When you're in a support group, a health support group, when you're new, you're mentored in usually by somebody older in the group, you know? And as you're there for a longer period of time, you become an older person, then you become a mentor. And that process actually empowers you. It feeds an ego need that you have. So you're actually establishing your own credibility within that group. I think that your ego reinforcement and your credibility must transport itself beyond that social group, beyond that community, to other real world Second Life relationships. But that's just one part of the answer.
Yeah. Stolvano asked a really interesting follow-up question. Do you think non-wheelchair users real life should do so in Second Life? Should you, let me just leave it at that. You know, do you think that if I'm not a wheelchair user in real life, should I be a wheelchair user in Second Life? Is that legitimate?
Why not? I mean, I had somebody tell me that in real life they are white and they have chosen to be black in Second Life in order to understand, just to try anyway, to understand a little bit of it. Couldn't that be one of the benefits of this experience? Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, you might find out that it's damn difficult to get around, you know, in a wheelchair. Or as the person who plays black in Second Life, you might find that people do perceive you differently, or you perceive yourself within those social relationships differently. I can't help but choose that as a valuable experience, potentially.
Yeah. And Jackie Rexon points out, isn't that an individual decision? I mean, maybe that's the bottom line, is that every individual coming into a virtual world has to decide how they want to present themselves. Some people don't want to have their real life and their virtual life, you know, connected in any way. Others have no problem with that. And it's really an individual choice on how you present yourself
Nonetheless, it's kind of important to stand there and say, as I did, and you're going to laugh, but when I first came in world, I had this whole debate with myself about my figure. You know, should I look like me? How big should my boobs be, for example? You know, is that going to look professional? I had to kind of like directly relate, oh my gosh, you know, I think about these things in real world, but I can't really affect them as much. And I decided not to look like me in Second Life. I'm much shorter and rounder. but just that, you know, you become then aware of what these things mean and how they interact with your own ego, you know, how you present yourself.
Yeah, and I'll end up with a story that we need to – I was once flying around, and I, you know, I usually leave myself in behind, and I noticed that I was a little bit hippier than normal, and I was walking differently, and somehow I changed from a man to a woman while I was flying around.
Bugged you, didn't it?
Yeah, my first reaction was, oh, my gosh, you know, I've got to change that right away. And then I thought, well, why? You know, why am I so bent out of shape that I change, turn into a woman flying around? So it just interesting things happen with that self and sense of self and sense of place in society as we move around in these virtual environments.
I agree with that. When I saw that.
Yes. So we've been speaking with Carol Perryman, who's the coordinator of Health Info Island here in Second Life. And again, you know the routine now. We're going to take a couple of minutes break while we switch audio, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about teens and tweens and school libraries in virtual world. So hold on, folks. Thanks.
Hi, this is Gabrielle Real with a quick note regarding the audio that you are currently listening to. Due to a combination of logistic and technical problems, this audio file does not contain the presentation on schools, tweens, and teens in virtual worlds by Kelly Zarnecki from the Public Library of Charlotte and Mecklenburg County. Kelly was unavailable, and therefore her information was presented by Tom as well as Lori Bell. And also, the recording quality of that part of the presentation was too poor for publication. Therefore, the presentation picks up with Sue Berggren speaking on graduate library students in Second Life. And the recording continues as Sue is beginning her introduction about who she is and how she became involved in libraries in Second Life.
Two grown children who are in college right now. And the most experience I've had with gaming is playing Dr. Mario using Nintendo. And as you know, that's nothing like the World of Warcraft, and it's certainly nothing like Second Life. But this past summer, I took a class called Adult Public Services, and I feel very fortunate that Lori Bell was my instructor. And I had no idea who Lori Bell was and how much of a leader she's been in the virtual world of librarianship. But during our class, Lori eased in topics about Second Life, and she gave examples of, you know, what we would do as a librarian in a real library and then what we could do in Second Life. And our discussions range from holding book discussions to how to deal with problem patrons. And she brought in guest speakers each week, and they all seemed to know a lot about Second Life, and they were doing work in Second Life. But my class was definitely a class of unbelievers, and there was a lot of skepticism, me included, basically because we just didn't understand what Second Life was. So one day before class, there was a discussion on doing practicums and how valuable they are for getting real experience in a library. And that interested me because I have a lot of experience being a library user, but I've never been a librarian, and I really wanted to know more about what I was going to be experiencing with once I graduated. So Lori threw out the idea that someone could do a practicum in Second Life. And I grabbed it. I thought, you know, I want to get more experience in a library before I graduate. I wanted to know more about Second Life. I was very curious. And I felt that if virtual worlds are the way of the future, I wanted to learn what skills are necessary to be productive and innovative. And plus that, Lori Bell agreed to be my supervisor, so that was a big plus. So now that I'm here, what has it been like? Well, I created my avatar, Sue Carillion, and I picked Carillion because it very closely resembles my favorite musical instrument, which is the carillon. And like many people, I had a lot of trouble getting Second Life to work on my laptop. I ended up having to add an extra gig of memory. And now it works pretty well. I haven't had a lot of trouble. But my first day in Second Life on Orientation Island was a total bust. The lag was so bad that I had to just log out, and I missed all of the tutorials. But I survived, and I really didn't see anything wrong with the way my avatar looked. I know I looked like a newbie, but I was planning just to keep it until one day I saw someone who looked exactly like I did, and it really creeped me out. So I did some shopping, and now I at least have a different outfit. So I've taken a variety of classes, and I participated in several conferences as an observer. The classes were fun because I saw several avatars having trouble sitting, which is a problem that I have, too. I always end up looking the wrong way. And the conferences were a lot of fun, too, and I observed that it's quite a challenge to keep track of a group of avatars on a field trip. It's almost comical. But I've done some exploring and found that it's hard to find something by wandering around on foot. It's more fun to fly, but it'd be easier if buildings had signs on their roofs. And I find that the TP, the teleport boards, are really, really helpful for me. But it's impossible for me to get a feel for where everything is if I just always teleport to where it is. So what have I learned? Well, I've certainly learned a new skill, a new interface, a new type of technology. And I now feel somewhat comfortable in the environment. I still try to arrive at meetings early so I can get seated the right way. But I'm very excited that I've had the opportunity to meet a lot of librarians from all over the world. And this was especially nice for me because I live in Naperville, which is a suburb of Chicago, and all of my classes have been LEAP classes. I haven't taken any classes on campus, so I haven't had a chance to interact much with librarians. And I've enjoyed being part of all the different groups, and I found that you can learn a lot just by reading the frenzy of emails that go back and forth. That's been really, really neat for me. And I've learned that librarians are very creative and very giving of their time. So as Tom said, I have a project for my practicum, and that's to determine what librarians are doing in Second Life. And I had to scope it down a little bit. You know, there's no way I can learn what all the librarians are doing in Second Life. There's just way too many of them. So I'm just going to do a sample, and I'm still in the information gathering phase, but it's been an interesting experience because I'm getting experience with conducting surveys and doing literature searches, and I'm definitely looking for alternative ways to get the information that I need. I found that there aren't many journal articles published on what librarians are doing in Second Life. It's more of articles in general and opinion papers on if we should be there at all. So I found that YouTube and Flickr have been very, very helpful, and I've been trying out a new tool called Slug, which is a bookmarking tool for places and avatars in Second Life. I found some information by searching blogs and websites, and I've been able to visit some of the libraries that I've found this way. So now that I have a tentative list of libraries and librarians, I want to start conducting interviews. And I'm really looking forward to talking with the people. And I feel the real value in a library, whether it be real or virtual, is the people who have the ideas to create and manage the library. The building is strictly just a shell. And I'm hoping to gather my interviews into a paper that I can publish. So to sum up, I think for students, Second Life provides a way to locate and contact experts, all kinds of experts, you know, archivists, academic librarians, public librarians, and everyone is on the same level and accessible. And if you don't peek at someone's profile, you don't even realize that you're chatting with the director of a library. So that's pretty cool. I think Second Life gives students an environment to try out things, and a lot of learning happens when you experiment with something and you don't get it quite right. There's a lot of value in that. For me, it's been somewhat difficult because I'm used to learning by reading books, articles, forums. And in Second Life, I have been learning by experiencing, and I've been running into a lot of walls. And the other day, I got stuck in a staircase. And it's sometimes hard to figure out how best to interact with a collection. You know, not everything is obvious. And sometimes I just tell myself to just slow down and really study what's in front of me and to look for clues. And, of course, after being in-world for a while, I've learned at least some of the things to try. Walking for me is still clumsy. I think if I could master a hover to just suspend myself above the ground, I would travel much more quickly. I've heard the argument that librarians need to be in Second Life because our users are here, and that may be true. But I feel that librarians need to be in Second Life so that we can experience and understand the capabilities of this virtual world. We need to understand the technology so we can develop effective ways to partner with our users. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Sue, very much. It's interesting. So you've been an online and virtual student throughout your graduate career?
Yeah. All my classes have been distance classes.
Wow. And do you feel isolated at all, or do you feel like, I guess you can't compare it to, were you ever a graduate student where you're like, you were on a campus and in the real world all the time?
You know, it is somewhat isolating. There's a lot of chatting that goes on in forums, and we have a live lecture once a week. But like I said, you don't have the experience of bumping into people in the hallway. And I think Second Life is a great facilitator for that, that I can get into Second Life and I can bump into people and I can go to the reference desk and chances are really great that somebody will be there.
Yeah, and you can literally bump into people in Second Life too, as well as in hallways in graduate school. You brought that up, and it's been a while since I've visited the reference area on Information International Island. But I was intrigued by the fact that often, especially in the evenings, there'll be a lot of librarians sort of hanging around the reference center, and it becomes almost more of a group process than a single librarian sitting at a reference desk waiting for a single avatar to walk up and present his or her information need. I mean, do you think that reference service as a service is kind of morphing a little bit in virtual worlds?
I think it's definitely a social experience, and depending on what time you go to the reference desk, it can be quite entertaining. You never know who's going to show up, so it's interesting.
Andrew asks, and I want to ask too, when's your report going to be ready, and would you be willing to share it with the wide world?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'm really busy this semester, so I would like to get it done this semester, and I plan to do my interviews soon and write it up during Thanksgiving break. So that's my plan. And if anybody has a pointer for me of who I should talk to or where I should go and check it out, please let me know. I'm very interested in more libraries to look at. Libraries and librarians. It doesn't have to be a physical building.
Okay. People have been asking about that bookmarking tool that you suggested. It's sloog.org, sloog.org. Any more about that particular tool?
There is. If you can go check out their website. It's a way of, you can, while you're in Second Life, you can tag places and you can tag avatars. And you can give any kind of tags that you want, and then you can, I look at it from a website then outside of Second Life, and I can search for, like, I was searching for libraries, and you can find different places that different different people have flagged as libraries, and it's interesting. You usually can see a picture, and you can teleport right there.
Is there, like, a rating and review system in there, too, so you can sort of see what people had to say about that site, or?
You can,
tool.
Some people write comments, but it's basically a way to tag things. It's like Delicious. It's a way of tagging places in Second Life. So it's definitely something to try out. I really like it.
Yeah, so someone said it's kind of like Delicious meets Facebook, and you're bookmarking people, basically.
Oh, avatars. Yeah.
There's a question from... Yeah, it's just sort of as you wander around, you say, oh, this is interesting, and you can bookmark it, basically.
Right.
Ipuna Bookmite asks, how open are search committees and hiring administrations committees to job applicants with your type of profile? Do you have any sense of, you know, do you think that you'll be more marketable based upon your experiences and your online and in-world educational experiences?
You know, I'm hoping that I am. I tend to believe that I will be because I feel that's the way the world's going. You know, we're becoming virtual. I don't know if Naperville is ready for Second Life, but I think it would be fun. It'd be a fun thing to do.
Okay. There are some librarians. I just met a librarian in Second Life her Second Life librarianship is now her full-time job. I mean, and she's in a library. So, you know, I think that might be a trend that we'll see. Just as, you know, there was a time when systems librarians were like strange, odd creatures. Not that they are also today, but, you know, it was like a new position as a systems librarian. And so I think that like a virtual world librarian is maybe that's where we are right now, just starting to see some of these positions start to emerge in our profession. Okay, well, I want to thank Sue, and now we party, I guess, or we can just mingle and chat and continue on. So I think we're going to stop the audio portion, the Radio Reel part of this. I do want to thank again Gabrielle Reel for providing us with a wonderful audio stream throughout today's symposium. I want to thank everybody who was involved in planning and presenting this symposium, and, of course, I want to thank everybody for attending. I think we maxed out at about 78 people this morning, and most of you have stuck to the entire symposium, and I thank you for that and giving up part of your Saturday to join us today. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend.